Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 342, Mousa Mashup, Saturday, February 15th, 2025. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record a podcast, I post photographs, show notes, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: Yarn Lover at Large, On the Porch, Ever Expanding Skill Set, and Off the Shelf. Hello and welcome, everyone. I am so glad to be recording on a February morning just before we're expecting a snowstorm here in Northeast Pennsylvania. This promises to start with snow, but end probably in a sleety, rainy mess, which is always sad and disappointing, but hopefully the initial snow will be very pretty. It's been a while since I've recorded, and one of the exciting things that happened is that I was able to attend Vogue Knitting Live in New York City in mid-January. I joined my friend Jenny, and we just took in the marketplace on the Saturday of the convention. But despite that short time, I was able to fit in breakfast with Mary Jean Packer of Bat and Kill Fibers, and I was able to meet up unexpectedly with Corrine and Maggie of the Woolly Thistle, and Jenny and I did the rounds of the entire marketplace. We did a little bit of shopping and some visiting. In particular, we took in the farm and fiber knits section of the marketplace, which was dedicated to Hudson Valley Textile Project initiatives, as well as Farm Yarns and the Farm and Fiber Knits publication. I've been privileged to be able to take part, a small part, in two photo shoots for this publication. And so I was familiar with a lot of the designs and the yarns that were used to knit up the samples. So that was really exciting and I think an interesting extension of this convention into something that's more farm forward and a little less New York fashion forward. The last time I attended this event was pre-pandemic. I think it was 2018 or 19. And I think the event has changed a lot since then. Maybe its focus is shifting a little bit, or maybe just my focus as a consumer is shifting a little bit. I was very interested in two booths that had Jameson's of Shetland yarn because I had in mind a project incorporating some of this jumper weight yarn. And so a good deal of my shopping took place at Wing and a Prayer and also Your Next Knit, which carried those yarns. I was very pleased to run into two show listeners, Linda and Nazreen, unexpectedly, as Jenny and I made the rounds in the marketplace. And finally, just before we departed from Vogue Knitting Live, Jenny and I visited the fitting room, and this was at her suggestion. She had mentioned that at a previous convention, she went to the fitting room and had a personal set of measurements taken. I did not know about this feature of Vogue Knitting Live, but I highly recommend it. We went up to kind of a more secluded corner of the marketplace, And there were a couple of very professional staffers, one who took measurements and the other who wrote them all down on a card that was handed to me. So this is a completely free service that's offered at Vogue Knitting Live events. If you happen to have one in your area, I recommend that you take advantage of this because there are over 15 different measurements that were recorded and taken down, many of which are impossible to take on yourself. And if you've ever had, you know, the experience of trying to get a loved one to follow your directions and take a certain measurement, you know that that's not always a very easy thing. So the way this works is, like, it's very personal, but it's also impersonal because you don't know these people. And so I think there's a certain comfort level associated with that kind of objectivity. In my case, I was wearing a camisole top under my very oversized sweater. So I was able to take that off and get really good measurements, like next to skin measurements, on this card. And then the card, you can enter your own measurements because there's this woman, Kim McBrien Evans, who's working on collecting as many actual measurements from people as she can to help designers design better for people's actual sizes, which I think is a really valiant effort. And I'm glad to have this and refer to it both for my knitting and for my sewing projects. I think it's kind of fun anytime I go to a knitting-related event to see if there are any themes that rise up from the booths or things that are displayed. And in this case, I think what rang true for me is the fact that quilting remains really hot. Both literal quilts, like clothing made from quilts, and quilting that's represented in knitting in various ways. And this I saw just walking around and seeing what people were wearing and also what was on display in many of the booths. My initial plans for visiting Vogue Knitting Live were to attend on the Sunday, but we were expecting some snowfall, significant snowfall on Sunday. And so Jenny was very accommodating in changing plans, and we agreed to meet in New York City on Saturday, which left me with really ample time during that snowstorm to take advantage of this beautiful, fluffy alpine snow for some washing of winter woolens. I've been doing this for a couple of years since I learned about it from someone's blog post. I forget what blog post. It's a technique that's used across Scandinavian countries a lot of times for refreshing rugs, actually, but it's great for woolens. So the technique I use when presented with some nice accumulating alpine snow is to let an inch or two accumulate on the ground to cover any grass, and then to go outside with a big armful of sweaters and accessories and lay them all out in the snow. It's also very important to count the number of pieces that you brought because some things, especially smaller things like hats or mitts, can inadvertently be left in the snow if you don't search carefully. So you lay everything out in the snow and you let snow accumulate on top of these garments and until there's several inches and you really start to lose track of their shapes in the snow. If you're expecting a really significant snowfall, you can go out and flip these things over and let snow accumulate on the opposite side. But that is rare here. Usually any accumulating snow is like 4 to 6 inches, which is enough just to let it pile up on one side. So then I go out and I collect all of the pieces that I had lying in the snow, and then I clean off a good portion of my porch banister, and then I vigorously shake and smack each piece against the banister to loosen as much snow as possible. Then I bring those things inside, and with a good alpine snow, what should happen is that the garments should be just damp but not soaking wet. And then I lay or hang them to dry on a wooden drying rack. This technique works beautifully to just release odors, provide a little bit of a reblocking effect, just plumping up the fibers, and then they, you know, shrink back together to have this nice dense look. It is not a way of cleaning a sweater if it's really soiled, but it's a really great refresh for pieces, especially midwinter when you're still wearing things and you're not ready to be like washing them and putting them away for storage. And it's also kind of fun to put all your sweaters and garments outside and to see them, you know, accumulating the snowfall. So I have some nice photographs and video of my process of doing this in mid-January. I've talked about it on the podcast before, but I had reminded Nazreen when I saw her at Vogue Knitting Live that she might take advantage of it. And it's kind of something you lose track of if you don't get snow all the time and you're not thinking about it. I want to give a shout out to the Verde Valley Weavers and Spinners Guild, and in particular, Pam Wilkinson, who was instrumental in creating an opportunity for me to talk to the folks out in Arizona about visible mending and different kinds of mending techniques that I've been using. Pam was such a kind and generous organizer. We had a beautiful conversation way back in the summer and set up this opportunity for me to visit virtually with the Verde Valley folks in January and share some skills, some tips, techniques, and answer some questions. I had so much fun doing that. I hope it won't be the last time I connect with that group. And I want to send out a special thank you to Pam for being the glue that held all of that together. I also want to say hello to some recent sewists who have taken part in the beginning garment sewing class that I've taught at Pocono Sew and Vac. This was an opportunity to sew a all-well box top. I had 4 amazing students, and they all left with finished or nearly finished garments, and I hope this is just the beginning of their garment sewing adventures. Coming up on February 22nd, I have a 2-hour class about PDF patterns. So if you're interested in that and you're in the Stroudsburg area, you can contact Pocono Sew and Vac and find out the details regarding signing up for that class. It may be that I teach another garment making class in the future. There are still some people who are interested, or dates didn't work out for them when we were holding the classes the first time. So I will keep listeners posted about my adventures in teaching there. After completing a craft space makeover in early January, I found myself drawn to the space and eager to try out all the new features of the space by working on a sewing project that I've had in mind for a really long time. And that is an Amy jumpsuit incorporating the invisible zip feature that I have never done before on any of the iterations of the Amy jumpsuit I've made. And also employing a snap inseam. Mary Beth suggested that I consider snap tape, which I had never considered before, for closing up the entire inseam of a jumpsuit. Because I was looking for some solutions for wearing a jumpsuit in all seasons. That's important to me because I specifically sew these Amy jumpsuits knowing that they work in my wardrobe throughout the seasons. In summer, just wearing them as is, a sleeveless option. But in colder weather, layering those jumpsuits with different sweaters or even another top and a jacket. And that is a lot of layers to remove when nature calls. So I had been thinking about an alternative. Then when Mary Beth suggested the snap tape, I started turning that over in my mind. And finally, I ordered some navy blue snap tape to coordinate with the lightweight denim that I would be using for this version of the Amy jumpsuit. I also lengthened this jumpsuit by 3 inches, one to give the pant leg a little more length, and second to give the hem a little more depth because I wanted a nice deep hem on this version. And I, in looking at the other jumpsuits I made, I did a very, very tiny hem in order to get as much length out of it as I can. So I installed, it wasn't easy, but I was able to use the zipper foot on my machine to sew in the snap tape along each inseam and really just get it anchored there with the machine sewing. It doesn't look super pretty, but it works and the snaps align perfectly. So that all worked out very well. But now it's time to do some hand finishing so that the snap tape isn't visible from the outside of the garment. And really, because it's an inseam, it wouldn't be immediately visible, but I think it would just be more beautiful. And also it would drape nicely and have a nice flowing look to it if it were completely hand finished. So I took a really good look at it a few days ago and determined that a very simple whip stitch along one side of the snap tape would suffice to make it blend seamlessly and not be visible from the outside of the garment. Since I have long legs, that inseam is not insignificant, and it will take quite a bit of time to hand sew all of that, but I think it will be a beautiful finish, and I'm really looking forward to the wearability of this jumpsuit being in this lightweight denim that's like super versatile and imminently wearable, and then also the functionality of the snap inseam. It's now Sunday, February 16th, and I've decided to re-record my talk about the Mousa mashup because it is now a completed project. And I feel I can speak more specifically about the design choices that I made and how I feel about the garment. I'm referring to the sweater as the Mousa mashup because I did three different kinds of combining of ideas and materials and information as I knit this sweater. It had been on my mind for quite some time, so not all of these decisions were made at once, but I was very pleased with the fit and the shaping of the sole blouse by Aegyo Knit, while at the same time, I've long had a desire to knit the Mousa sweater in Marie Wallen's Shetland book. This is the sixth pattern of 12 that I have knit from the book. It's a tunic length pullover with no sleeves. It's just kind of like a long tunic vest. It has some beautiful Fair Isle designs, and they are not uniform. Some are large, some are quite small, and they're combined in this very pleasing way with, I think, maybe up to 10 colors. And so I wanted to combine the shaping and the fit of the sole blouse with the Fair Isle motifs of Mousa. So that was the first combination that I took on. Another combination, or a risky combination, is that I was planning to combine different weights of yarn in this project. I had remaining some beautiful Foster Sheep Farm Concordia from Carol Foster that I was using to knit the sole blouse, but I had quite a bit left over. And then I wanted to combine it with a whole bunch of different jumper weight yarns from Jameson and Smith, Jameson's of Shetland, as well as Marie Wallen's British Breeds for the motifs. I was concerned about how that might work because Concordia is considerably heftier than jumper weight yarns. But then again, jumper weight yarns are always used two at a time to create the color work motifs. So I took a leap and I thought it might work. I was also knitting this sweater at a much different gauge than the Marie Wallen designs in Shetland, and I used a US 6 needle. And then finally, as if it weren't enough to, you know, take the motifs from this Mousa, I actually pulled motifs from Mousa as well as the Burra cowl to create the kind of look that I wanted. Everything was on a slightly different scale because I was using US 6 needles. So while Marie Wallen's design repeats many times over the body of the sweater, I didn't have that many repeats of each design. And so I needed to think carefully about how I would build those together. All of these decisions, which admittedly may seem very risky, are part of my creative process. Often what I find myself doing is repeating something I have sewn, something I have knit, something I have cooked, but making modifications to that design, structure, or recipe in order to fill needs that I have or to satisfy some hole or gap in my existing wardrobe. And so this process has become more comfortable for me over time, I think because I've had a number of successes with it. It's more challenging to face something completely new than to retry something I've already done, but with some modifications. And so I'm pleased to say that the resulting sweater is incredibly wearable. It pretty much conforms to my expectations. I knit the sweater down way below my natural waist. And then I added some 2x2 ribbing in a split hem with the main color, as well as some 2x2 ribbing around the arm openings. And that was, I was going back and forth about how to resolve the arm openings. And my friends Sarah and Emily, after seeing a photograph of my project partially finished, they both said that the 2x2 ribbing around the armholes would be the most satisfying and kind of give the most closure. And that's important because the boat neck of this sole blouse is finished off in I-cord. So I think to give a lot of continuity to the piece, that 2x2 ribbing was pretty important. So I did about an inch and a half around each armhole, and then I closed that off with a tubular bind off. And then for the bottom ribbing, I did about 4 inches front and back. And I also cast that off with a tubular bind off. I have only steam blocked this sweater so far. I haven't given it a complete block, but I'm already wearing it right now. It's warm, and I really think the Marie Wallen motifs stand out in the way that I wanted. I was able to employ some beautiful colors that I had in my stash and that I purchased new for the project. And I'm glad to have this Marie Wallen piece to add to my collection. For Off the Shelf today, I have a poem from American poet Ellen Bass. And I'd like to share a little bit of her background before I read the poem. Ellen Bass was born in Philadelphia in 1947 and grew up in New Jersey. She has a BA from Goucher College and an MA in creative writing from Boston University, where she studied with poet Anne Sexton. She said that Anne Sexton encouraged me to write more, to expand, to go deeper and wider. She breathed life back into the process. Without her, I might have given up. She's the author of 9 poetry collections, and the most recent is Indigo in 2020. She has written several works of nonfiction, including Free Your Mind, the book for gay, lesbian, and bisexual youth and their allies. With Kate Kaufman, she co-wrote The Courage to Heal, a guide for women survivors of child sexual abuse from Perennial Library in 1988, and this has been translated into 10 languages. She was Chancellor of the Academy of American Poets in 2017, and she has been granted California Arts Council and National Endowment for the Arts Awards, as well as the Lambda Literary Award for Poetry and the Pablo Neruda Prize for Poetry. She currently lives in Santa Cruz, California, and teaches in the Low Residency MFA program at Pacific University. This poem that I'm going to read from Ellen Bass is titled Relax. Relax by Ellen Bass. Bad things are going to happen. Your tomatoes will grow a fungus and your cat will get run over. Someone will leave the bag with the ice cream melting in the car and throw your blue cashmere sweater in the dryer. Your husband will sleep with a girl your daughter's age, her breasts spilling out of her blouse. Or your wife will remember she's a lesbian and leave you for the woman next door. The other cat, the one you never really liked, will contract a disease that requires you to pry open its feverish mouth every 4 hours. Your parents will die. No matter how many vitamins you take, how much Pilates, you'll lose your keys, your hair, and your memory. If your daughter doesn't plug her heart into every live socket she passes, you'll come home to find your son has emptied the refrigerator, dragged it to the curb, and called the used appliance store for a pickup. Drug money. There's a Buddhist story of a woman chased by a tiger. When she comes to a cliff, she sees a sturdy vine and climbs halfway down. But there's also a tiger below and two mice, one white, one black, scurry out and begin to gnaw at the vine. At this point, she notices a wild strawberry growing from a crevice. She looks up, down, at the mice, and then she eats the strawberry. So here's the view, the breeze, the pulse in your throat. Your wallet will be stolen. You'll get fat, slip on the bathroom tiles of a foreign hotel, and crack your hip. You'll be lonely. Oh, taste how sweet and tart the red juice is, how the tiny seeds crunch between your teeth. Thank you for joining me. I hope you have some relaxation time this week, and I hope you have some time for the crafting you enjoy. Take care.